Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, visual arts, communications, and comparative religion.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
And I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith. We're joined today by Ethan Moses. Ethan is a maker, designer, and fabricator specializing in some of the oldest forms of chemical photography. He utilizes state-of-the-art digital fabrication techniques like 3D printing and laser cutting to create cameras based on old designs and expired patents. He is a regular contributor to online magazines and blogs about chemical photography, such as Emulsive, Film Shooters Collective, and 35mm Collective. He teaches chemical photography techniques online and at makerspaces. Ethan is also a member of the board of directors of QLab, a makerspace in Albuquerque. His company, Cameradactyl, makes 3D printed film cameras and accessories for the general public. Ethan, you use expired patents for creating some of your cameras?
Yeah, so sometimes it's really interesting now what you can do with the internet, right? So I don't know that in 1995, when everybody shot film, I would be able to make film cameras. I certainly wouldn't have had access to things like $200 3D printers that can make almost any shape I want, or laser cutters or makerspaces. One of the really interesting things is Google patents. So if you want to know how something works, you could find a repair manual somewhere, pay for it, ship it, go to the Library of Congress, look for its patent, or buy it and take it apart. But oftentimes, if you're just looking at like the most base piece of a mechanism and trying to figure out how a shutter works, you can look up all of the patents from 1935 or 1918, 1950. And the interesting part about making mechanical things is we sort of reached mechanical supremacy a really long time ago, before we went to electromechanical everything. Since the 70s or 80s, everything has had digital solutions, or if not analog, electronic solutions. And for the most part right now, digital solutions for things like light metering, film metering. And so if you are trying to look for mechanical geared solutions for one sort of thing or another, Google Patents has all these expired public domain patents for different types of wind mechanisms and shutter mechanisms and that sort of thing. Of course, that's not like a formula on how to build such a thing or how to even design one, but it gives you the base idea of how such a mechanism works, which is a great starting place.
So I've never researched patents, and I'm very curious about this. You know the equipment, so you know specifically what you would be looking for. So, for example, with the film rewind mechanism that you showed me in your camera, you said it was 1910 era technology. Mm-hmm. So you knew you wanted a rewind device, and you went and found patents for it. And then what kind of information do those patents contain?
I'll give you a two-part answer. So I'm not always looking for a patent for a film rewind device. Sometimes I'm looking for a set of intermittent motion gearing, which, you know, in clock design, there's maybe a 1,000-year history of these sort of designs. So the patents I'm searching for are wide-ranging and mechanical, if I am curious about a thing. As for reading patents, there are patents of different types. Could I read a chemistry patent? Probably not with such proficiency as one that's a set of gears and how they work. But generally, you know, they will do a pretty excellent isometric and orthographic projection view of the thing and maybe some cut sections, just hand drawings usually. And then they might label all of those pieces. And then they will, in the first part of the patent, make a claim about what this thing does. For example, they'll say what the problem is that needs to be solved, what the current state of the art of solving that problem is, and what this patent does to improve. So you might see something like a shutter dampener on a Leica camera that's just a patent for this little like rubber or spring stop. And so it would say, currently cameras suffer from this amount of shake and noise due to this type of shutter. The state of the art shutters are built like this, but they don't have this bump stop. And then they would go on to say, this bump stop decreases the sound of the shutter by X percent. And then they would go on to describe the motion of the shutter and how this bump stop acts on it. A good patent will lead you through the steps of each piece of a machine from the input to the output. It's very like step-by-step Lego's approach to actual mechanical systems.
So it's a diagram and then an explanation. It's almost like a how-to video. Well, in the case of what yes. you're looking at, these mechanical objects. I just also want to back up just a second. Something that's come up with a lot of our guests, it seems like over and over, is the democratization of knowledge, the democratization of technology, the democratization of fabrication in the modern era. Google patents is actually something I have not even heard about till you had brought it up, and I spend way too much time in the land of the Google overlords. So what is Google patents?
Probably you and a bunch of your listeners would be familiar with things like Google Scholar or Google Books. Generally, that started out as paper information and maybe is now hard drive information, but should be cloud information available to all, yada, yada. I'm not going to get into digital data politics, but the point... The point is that it's a repository for lots and lots of scanned information.
So it's an archive.
Yeah.
This is only expired material or not copyrighted or...
You know, I am not 100% sure on what they are scanning and what they're scanning and not publishing yet. But a patent is a public document, right? Mm-hmm. So generally when you patent something, you don't want to give away the goose. You want to protect your mechanism, but not necessarily show how your mechanism is built. But there's a lot of patents on Google patents, particularly American patents, particularly, you know, electromechanical patents pre-1970s, but even through, you know, modern patents are up there.
And they have metadata and stuff, so you can sort of punch in useful searches and turn up. But then you're looking at kind of scanned documents in that sense.
Yeah, but I think they use a lot of OCR. So while it's scanned, it's still pretty searchable. Google's pretty good at that.
I want to sort of revisit that democratization of fabrication. And I know that you're active in a community of people who make their own cameras. Do you find useful information from what other people are researching and learning? Do people share information or share findings in any way?
Oh, yeah. This is actually kind of interesting, is that there are certain processes that maybe wouldn't have been done during the film era that are now done because, one, there are no commercially available options, and two, that there are forums like Fotrio and APUG, Facebook groups, right? Everything has kind of taken off because you can share information with weirdos super interested in what you're interested in their corner of the world, right? Like, there's not 10 people on my block who really like hanging out and building cameras. I'm that one weirdo on my block. And so, you know, the internet really brings people together, which is incredibly interesting to me, particularly if you're interested in some real small niche. The other part of it is sort of like back and forth and community aspects of these things. It's often a dilemma for me, right? Because the power in what I do is, at least theoretically, that I could send a file to a dude in China and he could print it out for, you know, less money in materials than it would cost me just to pay for the shipping to ship him a camera. But often I don't do this because I'm not famous enough or charming enough to make money doing something like, you know, YouTube. I've seen other creators use these sorts of methods, but at scale, to give away files like this. But figuring out a way to profitably share files and designs with people so that they can make their own and modify it would be really interesting to me, because there are other bigger projects that I would like to work on that at my small manufacturing scale really doesn't make sense for me to make. So like film developing machines, you know, I have 12, 13 3D printers in my house. The parts are cheap. At least the electronics are more sophisticated than you would have had in a photoprocessor in 1995. And they're dirt cheap, and you can buy motors for $7 from China now. You can buy motor controllers for $1.50, power supplies for $2. These are things that I don't think I could manufacture, but absolutely, you know, make a list of parts that you could buy on AliExpress for $30 and send out a set of STL files for the physical pieces that you need to print, and then make a YouTube video on how to put it together. You know, it would allow people for $250 to build a Noritsu, which is $50,000 machine now, and also rebuild their Noritsu after Noritsu and Fuji go out of business making these types of things that you can't now get parts for. And so would it be as good as a Noritsu and perfect? Maybe not, but I think it would do a really good job. I think it's not rocket science. And after that's done, right, it would still require that people build these things at home, maintain them at home, but it would require a bunch of people sort of ponying up a lot of cash to just make the design files. And I'm not sure if the internet's like willing to pay for just a set of files, right, or at large pay for it. So then I would give it to everyone for free, right? There's free rider problems with that.
A what problem?
A free rider problem.
Free rider?
Yeah, or like
I haven't heard
the,
that term.
The tragedy of the commons. In the economically rational man, there's some impetus to not pay for a common good if you don't have to, and then nobody pays for it. You know, I think there's also like perception problems. The open source ethos, you just get things for free. I really right. appreciate that. I stand on the shoulders of giants. Yeah, it would be really interesting if people could put full-time work into open source projects. I think that is the real thing holding the 3D printing camera revolution back, is that there's probably 100 people that I know who could do just as good a job as me if they just quit their jobs.
So I just want to touch on one last thing before we close this segment. The whole Google patent thing, I think, is there's something really so critical there in terms of being able to access the existing storehouse of knowledge. You talked about something called mechanical supremacy, that everything's already been solved, it seems like. I run into this with my own projects. I used to be a much more reinvent the wheel kind of guy, and then I smartened up, and now I'm much more likely to get online and see how someone else solved it. So I'm curious, are you patenting or copywriting any of your own work?
I'm very small and niche, right? And so I probably could afford the money to patent a few of my designs, although my designs are really about the execution and how they're put together, right? I have come up with a couple novel mechanisms that allow me to replicate the motions of older mechanisms with less precise manufacturing techniques. But, you know, my market is niche. I don't have a ton of money. I wouldn't have the money to enforce any patent violations, nor would I want to. The way I sort of have intellectual property rights is I just don't give out the STLs most of the time, right? It's a sad thing to do, right? Like I have so much, you know, sort of personal pride to see my stuff getting used elsewhere, whether, you know, I send it to somebody or even if they make it, right? So I had a project a while ago. I made a shutter timer. I needed a tool to calibrate a shutter, right? So it measures the duration of time that a shutter is open in microseconds or milliseconds. And these are traditionally pretty expensive tools, although they've just come down in price to like $150, $200. But I built one for like $4. And it's a pretty niche tool. And I didn't think that by the time I paid for FCC testing for electromagnetic compliance and like got a bunch of these things manufactured, I didn't think I would be that much cheaper than the $150 one. And that was a pretty good one. And like, maybe I would sell 100 of them, you know, so I just said, okay, here's a freebie to the world. And I made, you know, a GitHub page for it where you can download the code. And I made a YouTube video on how to assemble and use it. Like, I'm not a YouTube star, but 3,500 people have watched it or something to date. And every month or two, I see some post up on like Instagram or Facebook where like somebody has made one in Egypt. Somebody has made one in France. It's pretty cool to watch things like that have legs.
That is really cool. But yeah. I know that you write in your blog about the difficulty of creating economic models for walking that line between sharing the information, having your cameras in use, and giving people a way to get that hands-on joy themselves. So I know I've been experimenting with kits or things like that, but it is true, once you put the information out there, it's just going to be duplicated and shared all over the world. You have no control.
Yeah, but I love it, right? That's the power, right? The question I think that like all the creatives have is how do you monetize the thing I want to give away for free so that everybody has it? I don't know. I don't know that I have the answer. I got a degree in economics. I don't know. I don't really know anything about it.
And on that note, we will end this segment. For more information about Ethan Moses and his work, visit his website, cameradactyl.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance by Tristan Klum.